Thank you very much, Abe, for reading that for us. And thank you, Walter, for praying for us. Pastor Walter is on vacation, but we can be confident that our leader does not take vacation from prayer. Psalm 23. This is a verse or a passage that has struck me this last week. Or it may have been 2 weeks ago now, I took my boys out on a bit of a trip. My family this summer, we started something called geocaching. Some of you might know this term. For those of you who don't, all around the country, I think continent, maybe the world, people have hidden treasures or little stashes of logbooks or treasures, whatever it may be. And people, anybody, can go and download an app and go and look for these treasures. So me and the kids and Christy, we have begun looking for these treasures with our kids. Now, there is one that I know about that was in a fairly difficult place to get to. One where Savannah, our youngest, could not get to. But I thought, me and the boys, who are 6 and 8, we can go and do this. This one, this cache, was behind the Lettingham dealership. There's that creek, and that some of you maybe have even taken this path. It's a bike path or a walking path. I thought, okay, we're going to take this trail, and we're going to find this geocache. And so in my mind's eye, the image I get is this first picture that Ryan's going to put up on the screen. This is the image that I had in my mind. Just happy, exciting, bonding time between me and the boys. Now, one thing I should maybe point out was this was during one of those really, really hot days where we had those heat warnings. I had not looked at the temperature or the weather before we went out. So this is the context in which we are doing this. We go out, pack up our bikes, and we drive to this little path. Now, we get on our bikes, and it wasn't even 20 meters in that we realized that the paths were too steep for the boys' small bikes. For my mountain bike, it wasn't a problem. So at the beginning, we had to get off our bikes and push our bikes up the hill. We wouldn't ride them down because the boys were a little bit afraid for going down, so we had to walk our bikes down the hill. It wasn't 30 meters in that Judah decided to abandon his bike altogether, considering it more worthwhile just to jog with us. So his bike is lying in the grass, deep grass like this, and me and Noah, biking, Judah jogging behind us. Now, after about 100 meters and a whole bunch of complaining, we find a little bridge that I took a picture of. I took the opportunity to take a picture of something that matched what I thought this trip would be like in my mind's eye. Something happy and exciting. We took this time to rest and to gather strength back in our legs. And when, at my suggestion to go, it was met with a lot of protest. But as I reminded the boys, there is the geocache. We're so close. We're about halfway there. We can just keep on going. I can practically see it at this point. Okay. Noah gets back on his bike, and at this point, we're just ready to go. We don't want to go at the walking pace, so Judah climbs on my back, which I also took a picture of. This is our faces, but I had to force that smile, because this was not a very easy task. So with Judah on my back, we are riding literally through thick and thin, because the path was flooded with waters at certain parts. So I had to go out of the way and drive through the thick weeds that are now gathering in my spokes and in my gears, making it harder to go. But eventually, we stop. My little app dings, says we're close. We get off our bikes, and we walk through water and through grass and through rocks. And the next picture shows us that we have found the geocache. So exciting, it was rewarding, we had good times and bad times, but the journey was not done, because we got to log ourselves, exchange the treasures, and now it was time to go back. We were not done, we had to go back the way we came to get back to our van. So even though we knew what was to be expected, we knew where we had come from, it did not get any easier. I think on our way there, we had sweat so much and breathed so hard that we had left a very distinct human trail for all the mosquitoes to now find. Because I swear, going back, we were bitten a lot more than on the way there. So we walk and we bike, and It was about another 100 meters that Noah tells me he stepped in water. His foot is slippery. I said, oh, no, it's not bad. You can keep going. The pedals are grippy. He says, no, I can't do it. My foot's so slippery. And he's protesting, and I am getting bit. I said, we cannot walk. You have to get on your bike. So he gets on. His tires make about 2 rotations, and he slips, and he falls into mud. So now we are walking, and by the time we get to the back, we are the sorriest-looking group of mud-covered, mosquito-ridden, sweat-drenched, sunburnt group of bikers that you have ever seen. It was all right, though, and it was a bonding experience. And as I thought about that, I thought, wow, I see a lot of connections here to the Psalm 23 passage. Psalm 23 is an amazing one and has been a crowd favorite for many years, partly because it is so vivid. It describes a wide gambit of landscapes for our faith that at any given time, any person reading it can point out a specific place where they resonate with, where they feel like they are at. Psalm 23 doesn't, I don't think, describe a single place, a single faith time or point in time. Because sometimes it says, he lies me down. And at some points it says, we are walking and he is guiding me. There are different locations for different times in our faith. And that's what I want to talk about, the landscapes of our faith. Our landscapes are physical landscapes. The topography of where we live determines how we live. A person who lives in the north acts and lives drastically different than somebody who lives on the coast, to somebody who lives in the mountains, or somebody who lives in the desert. Our landscapes define, in many ways, who we are. I also think that our faith landscapes define who we are. So in Psalm 23, here's what I see. I see 4 major landscapes. And they are in verse 2, verse 3, verse 4, and verse 5, consecutively. Verse 2, so you can go to the next slide here, Ryan. Verse 2 describes still waters and green pastures. Verse 3 describes the right paths. You see, verse 2, it was lying down. Verse 3, it's time to go. We're walking. He's guiding me. This is the right paths. Verse 4 describes the valley of the shadow of death. And verse 5 talks about what happens when we're out of the valley. For me, the image that I get when you climb out of that valley is a mountaintop. Now, it doesn't use that term here, but we know that term, the mountaintop experience, that spiritual high, and that's the image that I get when I read verse 5. And what I'd like to do is go through each of these landscapes of faith, and I want to share with you something that I do to help me keep my faith in perspective. You see, as a parent, something that has helped me, one of my great mantras that helped me through the difficult times is this. It's very simple. It's just a stage. It's just a season. It's just a phase. We'll get through this. With the first child, with Noah, I didn't have this mantra yet. And every new difficult landscape I got to felt like the end. It felt like, oh, this is it. This is the rest of my life. This is who he is now. But as child 2 and child 3 came along, I can look back and say, no, this is a phase. This will pass. There's a light at the end of the tunnel. Because if I don't think about it that way, instead what I have in mind is, all I can think of is, this is irrational. You're unreasonable. There's no point to this. And maybe I can start even taking it personally and start saying, well, you're just doing this to make me upset. And that's the temptation. But I have to remind myself, no, this is just a season. It's just a stage. We'll get through it. We were through it with the other children. We've seen it before. We can expect it. And now I know how to navigate it. And this is what helps me also in my faith journey. Hearing Psalm 23 read out, I can say, this is a predictable landscape. God told us that we would be in this landscape. And for me, what I have to do is now walk through it. And these are the questions that I want to answer, that I answer for myself. So this next slide will show you. I ask myself, okay, what are the features? How do I know which landscape I'm in? You have to identify that first. The second thing is, how do I navigate this landscape? What are my responsibilities? How do I take advantage of this landscape? The third question is, what can I learn about God in this place? And lastly is, what should I watch out for? What are the warnings? Because each landscape comes with a positive and a negative. And we have to be mindful of both of them. So what I want to do this morning is share with you some of what I've learned in my journeys through the landscapes. And of course, you'll have, I'm sure, lots to add to it. And if you do, I'd be happy to hear them from you. I always like to expand my perspective. But let me share mine with you. So let's start with verse 2. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. So what are the features of this landscape? It's very, very clear here. In a metaphorical sense, green pastures, quiet waters. This is a place of comfort. This is a serene place. This is a restful place. How do you know you're in this landscape? You are satisfied. You are content. It feels good. It may even, at times, feel slow, maybe monotonous. Your faith may not necessarily feel on fire, but at the same time, you aren't in fear or in anxiety of your faith either. It's kind of an even-keeled, a bit mediocre faith. Question 2, how do you navigate? Well, it tells us. It says, he makes me lie down in green pastures. So the word here, I watched a short video of a rabbi discussing this verse. And the word that he uses, instead of lie down, he kept saying, sprawling. He makes me sprawl in green pastures. And I looked it up, and sure enough, the word can mean lie down or to stretch out. A week or two ago, I went and I helped a good friend lay some sod down. Now, I don't know if you have sod or if you've dealt with sod, but by the time we had a few rows laid out, my temptation was to just lay down and sprawl on the lush sod. I just wanted to sit there, lie there, rub my face in it. Like, it was so soft. You just wanted to feel it. In my yard, you don't sprawl on my lawn. We have weeds and sticks. You sit carefully and strategically on a blanket. That sprawling doesn't exist there. Okay, the landscape that was described here is the lush kind of a landscape where you just want to lay down. This feels good, okay? What is important? That you lay down, that you rest, that you wait. This is the important thing to do in this landscape. Jesus and his disciples, they rested. They also moved, but there was times for rest. In Mark 6, after the disciples went on their mission trips, they came back to report to Jesus what they had done, and Jesus said, come with me by yourselves to a place so we can rest. There was times for moving, but there was times for resting. And Jesus took many opportunities to rest, often by himself, sometimes with his disciples, but it was a time to not do anything, to not go anywhere, but just to be in God's presence. Now, not everybody enjoys this landscape, and this is something to recognize. There are certain personalities that feel that if you are unproductive, that that is time that is wasted. Some personalities have a difficult time dealing with the fact that we are just sometimes called to be still. Be still and know that I am God, right? That passage. And when you compound that type A personality type with a culture that says every minute has to be effective, completely effective, when you compound that personality type with an anxious culture, it makes this landscape difficult to deal with. What is supposed to be a restful landscape can at times feel anxious. Or maybe there are other times when we're in this landscape and you're not feeling that on fire kind of faith, that maybe you're tempted to think, well, maybe God has forgotten about me, or maybe I'm not doing something right to get that fire. And I don't think that's true. Sometimes it's good just to wait. Coincidentally, there was a quote on Facebook, one that's been floating around, but I had to read it because it fits so well. It says that Joseph waited 13 years, Abraham waited 25 years, Moses waited 40 years, Jesus waited 30 years. If God is making you wait, you are in good company. And that can be an encouragement in this place. Even Ezekiel, the prophet in the Old Testament, had a major call from God. But there was a time right before he was able to carry out his calling that he was taken. It says in Scripture that the Spirit took him away to a place to live with exiles, and he had to wait there for 7 days so that his spirit can rest. Question 3. What do we learn from God in this place? It's very simple. I think there's 2 major things that I learned from God in this place. 1, not only does God recommend rest, but he models it, and he brings us to it, and then he lies us down. It's the most obvious thing. The second thing that I learned and that I've had to deal with from time to time is that God has a plan, but he doesn't always let me in on the details of that plan. And he doesn't invite me on every adventure. Sometimes he asks me to sit and wait out, and I have to be okay with that. What do we have to watch out for? What is the warning in this landscape? It's this. Sometimes we can get too content. The Israelites were in a place where they were going to inherit the promised land. And they heard about the promises. It's going to be a place where they are going to thrive. And they're going to have everything that they have ever wanted. But God, right before Moses was done his ministry, he takes Moses and he sits him down and he has some instructions. He says to Moses, God predicts this, and he says, the people are going to be inheriting this land and they are going to thrive. And they're going to forget me. They're going to forget what I've done for them, and they're going to go and worship other gods. So God recognizes that when we get into that comfort zone, sometimes we can forget what God has done for us, and we just live in that place and stay in that place. So God has some instructions for Moses. He says, so I'm going to teach you a song. He teaches Moses a song about all the things that God has done for him. And afterwards, this is what God says. He says, these are not just idle words for you. They are your life. He teaches them a worship song to remember the things that God has done and said, these aren't just idle words. This is your life. Treat it as such. By them, you will live long in the land you're crossing the Jordan to possess. So that is our warning. But God gives us a remedy. In that place, don't forget God. Don't forget what God has done to bring you to that place. And by way of fighting or combating that attitude, sing worship. Sing of my praises and do not let them just become idle words. Okay, the second landscape. He restores my soul. He guides me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. So this doesn't give a topography. It doesn't show us a specific landscape, and I don't think it has a specific landscape. There are paths, and there are multiple paths, and they look different. And the thing we have to remember for this part is Jesus is going to guide us, and he will lead us on the right paths. The second thing it says is he restores our soul. And what does that mean? It sounds like healing. It sounds like a good thing, and it is. That word soul can be translated to mean other words that we have, like spirit, emotion, passion. All of these words are a right translation for that word. He restores our spirit. He restores our passage or our passion. So God gives us energy and motivation and an eagerness. That's what this landscape looks like. You have this nudging feeling inside of you that God is bringing you to a place, and you have the motivation and the ambition to walk the paths. This is how you know you're in this, or how I've known that I've been in this landscape. What is my responsibility in this landscape? How do I navigate it? Probably simply said, it's just obedience. He's leading us, I follow. I was lying in green pastures, I was sprawling on the grass, but there comes a time where he says, come, it's time to go, and I just have to go. And then I have to trust in the paths that he takes. At this time, we have to trust that the things that he's taught us, because he's teaching us in this landscape, the things that he's taught us are worth listening to. They're worth trusting. And sometimes he will take me on paths that are difficult and challenging, and these times require me to be humble. What do I learn about God in this landscape? He is a mentor. God has a plan. He is on the move. He is in action. He's also a teacher, and he treats us like sons and daughters. My kids, Nana and Papa, if they could, they would just keep them in green pastures all the time. It is all luxury and great and giving. That's what it is. That wasn't my experience growing up with Nana and Papa. As my parents, it was different than that. There were some green pastures, but there were times it was like, let's go. It's time to go, and this is where you're going to go. God is sometimes like our Nana and Papa, but sometimes he's like our parent where he says, it's time to go. So that's where we learn about God in this place. And what is the warning in this place? The warning is this, going ahead of God, moving where he is not. And he has filled us with an eagerness, with a zealousness, but that's a zealousness to follow him. Sometimes the temptation is a zealousness to go in other directions. Not all paths are easy. We know this. Some are tricky. Some are rocky. And there are times that we are going to be tempted to take our own paths because we're going to question the paths that God takes us down. And in doing so, we treat Jesus not as a guide, but as a stumbling stone. He becomes something that's in our way instead of a guide. And Jesus, or Paul warns us that Jesus, for some, will be like a stumbling stone. There's another time where Paul, in the book of Romans, he says, he's talking about the Israelites, and he says, some are zealous for God, but they're running in the wrong direction. He commends their zealousness, but he says, but they're going in the wrong direction. They're running fast the wrong way. And that's the warning that is here. Moses was very keen on this. He caught on to this temptation. And in Exodus 33, he says this. He's talking with God because he's having some hesitations. He doesn't know which way to go, and he's not sure where he is with God. And he says this to God. He says, if you're pleased with me, teach me your way so I may know you and continue to find favor with you. Remember, God, that this nation is your people. And the Lord replies, my presence will go with you, and I will give you rest. And Moses says to him, if your presence does not go with us, don't send us up from here. And that's our attitude in this place. We say to God, if you're not going ahead of me, don't let me go. If you're not going, I don't want to go. But the temptation is to go regardless. Proverbs 16:9 says, in their hearts, humans plan their course, but it is the Lord who establishes our steps. So we trust that he has the right steps for us. He has the right paths. Let's move on to the valley. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. This landscape can be, I think, simple to describe, so I'm not going to go into great detail. It's a confusing landscape. It's a dark landscape. It's hostile. It's desperate, maybe regrettable. And we can confuse this landscape for a physical landscape. When life is just dark, there are times where life can be going poorly, but our faith, our spirituality can thrive, and there are times where our spirituality is in a dark place, but our life is in a place of thriving. So we have to remember, this can be talking about both, I think, but I want to talk about the spiritual landscape, that place of confusion. The Israelites, they were in this place. They started in this place. They were in a valley. They didn't have a God to themselves. They were worshiping the Egyptian gods. And God calls them to himself, and he leads them through a valley, almost a physical, a literal valley. He leads them through the sea. God parts it through the staff of Moses. He parts the sea, and they have to walk through a valley that was the shadow of death. Only God's hand held back those waters from pouring back onto them. But furthermore, behind them was an army chasing them, and in front of them was a desert that almost for sure spelled out death for them. They were in the valley of the shadow of death. But Moses' staff, it comforted them. In this place, what we need is perseverance and a lot of trust. Paul said perseverance produces character, and character produces hope. We need to keep our trajectory. You see, in this place, we become blinded. It's dark, and we're not always sure where we're going, where we're at. And what we need to keep in mind in this place is we need to trust on the teaching that we earned in the right places. We trust that God has given us the right knowledge, and we use that, and we keep our trajectory in the valleys. In this place, we also need a reminder of the reward. Just like my boys on that trip, I had to remind them, don't worry, we're close to the cash, we're close to the cash, just keep on going, we're halfway there, it's going to be great, and it was. Sometimes we need that reminder. We are here for a purpose, there's a light at the end of the tunnel, just keep on going. One major thing that I think also we need to keep in mind, a way to navigate the valleys, is sometimes we do need to just call out for help. Sometimes that's all we can do. We get lost and we just call out for help. And here's something that we need to know about God. God responds to desperation. A desperate spirit turns God's head. Think about Exodus. The people called out for him. And what does it say about God? He inclined his ear. God heard their cry, and when it says he did that, he set a plan into action, and God was ready to take them out. Sometimes we need to just call out. God responds to desperation. Think about Jesus. How many times did he respond to desperation? Think about the blind man in the crowd. He had heard that Jesus was coming, and when he heard the crowd, he started crying out, Jesus, Jesus, Jesus. It was undignified. Like, it was embarrassing. The crowd was embarrassed for him. They kept telling him, be quiet. This is shameful. But he didn't listen. He kept calling out. He was desperate for Jesus. And Jesus did not become embarrassed for him. He had pity on him. And Jesus turns his head and he stops the crowd and he makes a way to this man and he heals him. Think about the woman who was bleeding for years, who clawed her way through a crowd just to touch the cloak of Jesus. Desperate. And Jesus did not look back and say, how dare you? He blesses her for her desperation. But it's not only healings. Think about Nicodemus. He left his peers in the middle of the night to follow Jesus, ask him, there is something you've got here and you have to teach me. If his peers had known about it, they would have rejected him. But he was desperate to hear about Jesus and what he had to say. So he crawled in the middle of the night like a thief to go see Jesus. Zacchaeus climbed a tree. He was not a respectable man. Let's not put it that way. But I think he would have carried himself as a respectful man. He was wealthy. He climbed a tree to see Jesus. And what did Jesus do? Hey, come down. Let me have supper with you. Jesus responds to desperation. And this is something that we have to realize. Whoever calls upon the name of the Lord will be saved. That's what we're encouraged, right? What is the warning here? The warning here is that we can ignore the rod. It says, your rod and your staff, they comfort me. Those are our comforts. There was a time when I was working as a farmer. Actually, I was a kid. What I was doing is I was invited to a friend's house, and he was a farmer. Like, he was a farm kid. He was, like, learning to drive at eight years old, driving through the fields. Okay, this is his life. He invited me sometimes to go help him on the farm. And this one time, we were herding cattle, and they gave me a stick, a big stick, to help them herd the cattle. And my instinct as a city boy was to start whacking the cattle, right? Get out of here, right? I was afraid of them. I was intimidated. And I was just like poking them and prodding them. And they came, no, that's not how you do it. No, no, you don't touch. You don't have to touch them with it. All you have to do is hold it out. It's just a fence. Hold it out to the side to usher them that way. Hold it on to this side to usher them that way. Sometimes you just bar them like this, like a fence. Sure enough, it worked. And I think the shepherds were a little bit like that with their canes, with their shepherd crooks. I don't know much about being a shepherd, almost nothing, but I have heard that the way the shepherds guide their sheep is not to whack the sheep. I don't know. I hope not. But instead, to just hold out the staff and say, no, not this direction. And the sheep are smart enough to know that's a blocked way. I shouldn't go that way. It's a dangerous way. And I think God works that way with us too. And in the darkness, when we're frantically running around because we don't know where we are or where God is, it doesn't say, your face comforts me. In this place, it's his staff and his rod that comforts me. And his staff for me has looked like this. It looks like a big, fat no. When I want to go this way, it's just a big no. I'm met with, like, obstacles. I'm met with a blockage. I can't go that way. And I have to just trust that God has blocked that way for me. Paul had an agenda. He was sailing the seas, and he wanted to go preach to the Gentiles. And he was going. And it says that the Spirit blocked his way. It prevented him from going any further. And at this point, Paul had to just say, okay, this is God's way of putting a staff out and saying, not this direction. You're going to go this direction. And that is our encouragement and our warning in this dark place. The second warning is we should not sit down. And this is a place where I've been to, where I just stop. See, we are supposed to be walking through it and moving to get out of it, but sometimes it just feels better to sit and stop. And this can be a dangerous thing, to stay in this place. It can have an effect on us that's something like Stockholm Syndrome. We can actually start enjoying that place. We have to be very careful of this. Lastly, the last landscape is the mountaintop. You've climbed out of the valley and you're on the top. And here's what it says. You prepare a table for me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil, my cup. It overflows. Surely goodness and love will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. This is a place of victory. You know this place because you are on fire. You have received. You are convinced of God's presence, and it feels like you have overcome through God's help. It feels like reward. It feels like your faithfulness has paid off in this place. This is what Paul is talking about when he preaches on the reward for the race we have won. This is what we're pressing onward for. And in this place, how do we navigate this place? We just hold out our cup. This is what we do in this place. We just receive the reward. It says he's preparing a table for us. We stop and we receive. This is a time for God to give. And our job here is to hold out the cup and just let him give. We just receive. We enjoy it. We are satisfied. We are filled up. But we're also on fire in this place. And the second thing we have to do in this place is we share it. It's not overflowing for no reason. God's not wasting his grace. He's giving us enough that it's overflowing so that when we are with other people, that they are sensing that overflowedness. They are receiving also from God's more than sufficient grace. This is the verses that talk about a lamp on a hill. We don't shade. We don't cover up the lamp. No, we hold it open. We let it shine for everybody to see it. We just take in and let it overflow to whoever should receive it. What do we learn about God in this place? That God is victorious. God has won the day. He always has. And even when we didn't think he has. Victory lies in God. He has already walked through the lowest of the lowest valley of the shadow of death. And he has already ascended the highest mountain. And he's there. And he's prepping a table for us so he can dine with us. and he fills up our cups until it spills over the rim. The warning in this place is to be tempted to think that we've earned it. That's the temptation. I did overcome. God owes me this. I've earned this overflowed cup. The disciples were with Jesus as he was praying one day, and he took them up on a mountain. And they were sleepy, like they were really tired. They couldn't stay awake. But all of a sudden, Jesus is met with Moses and Elijah on this mountain, and everything is really glowy, everything's really bright. Jesus' face is shining, and now the disciples are awake. John, Peter, and James, they climb up that mountain. They climb up the mountain, and they are having a mountaintop experience. They're like, yes, this is awesome. In fact, their words is, this is good for us to be here. They recognize the mountaintop. They recognize that victory. In fact, they were thinking about all the fulfilled prophecies. This is true. The prophets told us this was going to happen. Like, they were on fire. And then, I think it was Peter, he says, Lord, let me start building shelters for you, right? He wants to start giving back, or he wants to start, I don't know, I wouldn't say earning it in this place, but he doesn't have in mind the same thing God has in mind. They were just supposed to enjoy this place, but he's like, let me build a shelter for you guys, not realizing Moses and Elijah were not there to stay. It says in two of the Gospels that share this story, it says Peter did not know what he was talking about. In our eagerness to give back to God, sometimes we can miss what God has for us right now. Or sometimes we can stop the flow. Paul, in Thessalonians 5, he says, don't quench the Spirit. Don't stop the flow. And sometimes we can get filled up and we say, that's good, that's enough, I feel good now. Off I go with my overflowed cup. And that's a warning too. We're supposed to let it overflow. Don't stop it. Don't think that you've earned it. And don't walk away from it. This is our warning in this place. We're going to stop there. One last encouragement. Lloyd and Carol Leckman are missionaries in Winnipeg. And one activity that they lead us on is to close your eyes, and they think, they read through Psalms 23 for us a few times. And what they have us do is they say, just think about where you are at. What place resonates with you? What landscape, they didn't use that word, but I'm going to use it. What landscape are you standing in right now? Where's Jesus meeting you? And in that place, my encouragement is to just evaluate where I'm at and pray to God in that place. My prayers don't always look the same. They differ depending on where I'm at. When I'm in that place, I pray according to what I should be praying. How I navigate, what are my warnings? I pray against the warnings. God, don't let me do this, but God, lead me in this way and let me be open to these things. So the encouragement is to just evaluate the faith, figure out where you're standing, and accordingly have a relationship with God depending on where you're at and what you need at that place. That's my encouragement for you. Summers are an interesting time for our faith journeys as we get distracted with not routine type of things. And for me, going through this process in Psalms 23 has been a very big help for me. And hopefully some of these things will have resonated with you. Our Father, let us just this week and that right now in our faith walks just remember that you are our leader. You are a trustworthy guide. You are there. Even though sometimes maybe we wonder if you've hid your face from us and are tempted to think you aren't there at all, let us remember that you are and you are guiding and you have a purpose for us. Let us trust in you and be encouraged and inspired by you and filled up by you this week. In the words of Jude, to him who is able to keep you from falling and to present you before his glorious presence without fault and with great joy, to the only God, our Savior, be glory, majesty, power, and authority through Jesus Christ our Lord, before all ages, now, and forevermore. Amen. Enjoy your Sunday.